Hello, hello, hello. This is Mona and Noah Save the World, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
This is our last show before spring break. Tears. Right, Noah?
Certainly,
okay,
tears.
I was waiting for some sort of, like, tear to fall. So, as our listeners may know, Noah and I love to have guests on the show.
Of course.
It's, like, one of our favorite things. And today, we kind of went a little wild. We have not one.
Not two.
But three guests.
Wow.
Here. Let's have them introduce themselves. Elliot, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Elliot, and let me make it known that I am in tears right now. Not because of the spring break, but that Noah cut off time right in the middle of David Gilmour's solo.
Yeah, I knew that was gonna be an issue, and
Noah,
that was not a good move.
Noah has to say the station ID between first 5 and last 5 minutes of the hour, and we were cutting it close.
I've never done that before.
No one can say it in the middle of the solo
on the
without
second.
Cutting off the solo.
Just
okay,
in the
Liam,
middle? Okay, who's next?
My name is Liam, and that's all the personal information I feel comfortable sharing right now.
Cool,
Liam.
What's up? I'm Caitlin. I'm 19. I did learn how to read. And I'm excited to talk about time because I'm horrible about managing it.
Okay, so speaking of time.
Spoilers.
Oh,
over
shoot.
Here.
I'm so sorry.
All good.
So, as you may have guessed from our song, Time by Pink Floyd, our theme today is time.
Time.
As you may know, daylight savings is on Sunday.
Yes.
My least favorite day of the year because we lose an hour of sleep. Oh, Sunday's tomorrow. Wow, that's okay. Daylight savings
it's
is tonight,
here.
Kids.
It's here.
It's here. Oh. Well, time flies, doesn't it? Thank you, Caitlin. So we have a bunch of time experts with us here today.
And a lot of time puns that
a
you will suffer
time
through.
A lot of time puns that you will suffer through. Each person here has their own perspective on time. We have someone who's going to share their physics theory about time. We have someone who really talked a lot about time puns. And we have someone who's sad about the time being cut from the guitar solo. And Noah and I are here to encourage and facilitate that conversation with all of you.
I feel like we're hosting a panel on time.
I really feel like this is the roundtable. Welcome to ABC News. I'm George Stephanopoulos. I feel like we all know time is a social construct.
I actually don't believe that.
What?
I think time can exist independently of humans.
Okay, let's delve. I feel like this is a good time for Liam to give his super scientific artsy theory about time. Into the mic, Liam. Let's go.
I'm pretty sure that time is only just watches and clocks, so it's got to be a social construct, because we constructed watches and clocks.
Okay.
And also.
Yeah, but your physics theory, you were just telling
me
about it.
Oh, yeah, I think that probably time is relative to, like, where you're at. So, like, there's, you know, the whole speed of light thing. If you're a light second away from someone, then, you know, it takes time for the information to travel between you two. But it seems also possible that maybe you're just actually 1 second offset in time because, you know, space and time are the same thing and all that.
Yeah, so as someone who doesn't understand physics, I didn't really understand that, but I'd love for our scientific friends to weigh in on what that means. Noah?
Yeah, I mean, relative time, I think, is definitely a concept, and it's why we can, like, see things that have happened in the past. Or, like, because of how the speed of light functions, we can be looking into the night sky and see stars that have already faded out. But because the light is still traveling, and because... Honestly, it's crazy. Things in the universe are so far away. It doesn't make any sense. It's best not to think about it, but we can see things that aren't currently present, but are present in the past.
Wow. And that's kind of what you were saying, Liam, whereas if you're like a second away from someone.
They're different things.
The concept that I'm saying is that because of how time works and how light works, not only are we looking at the past, if someone was there looking at us, they would also be looking at our past. So it feels like you could just say that we're, like, offset by, say, 100 million years in time.
Elliot, you're nodding. Tell us more about your nod.
Okay, so this is where I do a disclaimer. I'm not a science major, and I don't study this intensely. I just took a class in high school where we talked a lot about time.
Good enough. Let's hear it.
Yeah, sure. So Einstein was kind of like the big man in this. So if anybody mm-hmm. knows Einstein, you know what
Heard
I'm talking
him?
About, and you'll
Heard
be able to tell.
Him,
you'll yeah. be able to know every time I say something that's just blatantly wrong. That's okay. So yeah, basically he discovered that, let's say if I'm traveling at a ridiculously fast speed, let's just say half the speed of light, because light's so fast that even half of it is really fast,
okay.
and I'm whizzing by Earth. The way that I observe time passing on Earth, I would observe people moving extremely fast. Like, I would observe the Earth just going around and around and around, and things might be happening. It just, there's a factor, there's a way to calculate it, but I'm not a math guy, so I don't know. I think we did it in my class in high school, but I forgot how to do it. It's been a couple of years. Man, I'm not explaining this.
No,
very
you are.
Well.
You are. Keep going.
Yeah.
We believe
so
in
basically,
you.
So basically, or... It's better explained, let's just say I leave from Earth on a vessel that travels half the speed of light, and I go to Alpha Centauri, 4 light years away, and I travel there. It takes me, I experience 4 years
okay.
to get there, because that's the amount of time that it takes. But, wait, no, that's not it, is it?
Anyone want to
know? No. So the
yeah.
people
yeah.
on Earth.
It takes me 8 years to get there physically. And I would experience... No, shoot, I forgot how this paradox works.
It would take you... If it's 4 light years away and you're going half the speed
yeah,
of light...
it takes me 8 years to get there.
You would feel like you're traveling for 2 years, and you would actually be traveling from someone else's perspective for 4 years.
For 8 years, because it's half the speed of light. But yes.
Well, if you felt like you were traveling for 2 years, then... So, if we're talking about going there and back, then it would be 8 years.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. But
and
yes,
you
that's
would feel
it.
Like you're traveling.
Doesn't that prove if time is really just relative, then Noah, when you were saying you feel like there is like an instrumental time without humans, I don't know. Doesn't that make it kind of a social construct?
I mean, obviously the progress of the universe keeps happening whether humans exist or not, but we as humans have made it important to our lives, and like if I don't turn in my paper when it's due, there are consequences, and we've constructed all the consequences around time rather than time itself. Like there's a way we've constructed time in society, and there's also time as a as just like how the universe moves forward.
How do we feel about that roundtable? I accept that.
Somewhat.
Like that. Yes,
I think
Caitlin. I'm
time
with you.
Time in the way she explained it. Yes, this is a social construct, and we've designed our culture.
It's both.
Yeah, we designed our culture around it. But scientifically speaking, at least from the sources that I have, there is no absolute universe time. There's no privileged point of view. Everything is relative to one another.
Well,
we cannot describe things independently of something else that is not also not a privileged view.
There's
but
sort
that's
of,
not a social construct because humans didn't make it. But please debunk me because I'm also, again, not an expert.
Well, there's sort of two ways you could go from the things we actually know. You could be saying time is... this thing in the universe, and when you approach the speed of light, your personal time changes. Or you could be saying that time is dependent on the point in the universe you're at, and when you travel close to the speed of light, you're just traveling at close to the speed at which time changes through the universe. So your personal time isn't changing, you're just outstripping the pace of time.
Whoa. Outstripping the pace of time.
I'm so confused.
I feel like that's something every college student aspires to. Want to outstrip the pace of time. Okay, I feel like my brain personally hurts. I feel like,
I think Caitlin brought up a good point.
Yeah.
In the consequences of time, because in humans' case, we do assign pretty significant values to time. Let's talk about deadlines.
Let's delve into it now. We started from the universe. Now we're going to zoom in onto us. How does time affect us?
So deadlines. Do people think that they're good to have? Or do you think that mostly they're arbitrary? The world doesn't really change if my chemistry homework is turned in at noon or at 6 p.m. It's not like you're grading it in between that time. Come on.
Fair.
What are the consequences realistically? I mean, some things, climate change, have pretty definitive like time consequences.
Yes.
So we should be working towards them, but on smaller scale things, is it important to establish deadlines and like have that sort of behavior and like that structure implemented in our society, or maybe is it more detrimental?
Well, no, ironically, weren't you talking 10 minutes ago, you were like, we have to say the whatever, what's it called, the thingy,
the station ID.
We have to say it within the first 5 minutes. That's a deadline, and that's a deadline you cut off the guitar solo to follow.
Yeah.
So I feel like you take deadlines pretty seriously.
We also stayed up real late working on our chem homework due at noon, and...
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really turned in an assignment late. Like,
oh, I have.
In class, if there's a deadline, I respect, like, I won't sleep in favor of getting homework done to get a deadline.
Caitlin, let's hear your stories of social norm breaching and deviance, of how you deviate from these deadlines.
Yeah, I'm a rebel. Just kidding. So I think with deadlines, there are clearly two types of deadlines, hard deadlines and soft deadlines. And all of it, you were talking about consequences before, and it's all about the consequences. And sometimes we make up sort of arbitrary consequences that teachers will make up if we're talking in the school context of, if you don't turn this in, you lose X points per day. But you talked about those other consequences of, you said, if you're not grading it in those hours of noon to six, what does it matter? And that's where I think we as a society could stand to be more reasonable about flexibility. And like, I'm saying this as someone who's a procrastinator and like needs to work on my time management, and like, it's good to get things done. And like, as a society, we want to be able to get things done and be productive. I mean, also capitalism, definitely. We could talk about that in a hot sec.
For sure.
Noah's happy that Caitlin's here.
Certain things, if there's a presentation for the class and you not having it done will affect the whole class and their learning, you should get it done on time. But if it's a paper that the teacher's not going to grade for 3 days, well, that should be more flexible. It's the consequences to others is really how I orient my moral self around how bad I feel about something being late.
That's really deep. What else? Let's hear more opinions.
I think the thing about consequences to others, though, is that school, especially being the example we're going with, is a little bit fake in like how it exists. It's a trial run of the world. Like it's meant to prepare you for whatever you're going to be doing in the world, and for some people that means learning because they're going to go into doing research. But for most of us, it means preparing you for whatever job you're going to have or whatever career you're
going to
have.
And, like, with the work, I think there's also that same soft and hard deadlines where sometimes that thing you need, that task, is going to affect other people, and sometimes that task won't affect other people. And I think you're so right about saying it prepares you for that.
But my thing about the deadlines is that realistically, like, the only hard deadlines are the ones with physical consequences in the world. The rest of them are social consequences that we've created.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like what are real deadlines? Global warming will flood things.
Yep.
If you don't eat in a certain amount of time, there's a deadline there.
But a literal deadline.
If you don't, say, get a project done for work, the consequence there is more of a social one because the system's large enough to compensate for your lack of productivity. But the reason that we have these false deadlines is because the system is large enough to compensate for your lost productivity. But if everyone did that, suddenly the people who are being benefited aren't being benefited anymore. And so it's constructed around that idea that even though there's no actual consequences, we need to enforce consequences so that everyone keeps producing what we want them to produce on time.
So I feel like we're seeing this balance between like the social side of like Caitlin was saying, you know, how does it affect others? And then I feel like, Liam, you brought up this interesting point about the physical world and how the physical world plays in. I rarely think about the physical world. I feel like I'm always more thinking about the social world. But the intersection is interesting. Why are you giving me that face,
There's just
Noah?
Some very good theory about how, as we progress into a neoliberal society, we'll stop understanding like material needs and like the physical world and politics and like thinking will become purely symbolic and meaningless. And like, so when you hear sort of like Democrats and Republicans debating over like freedom and justice and these abstract things, which arguably have value and are important and should be talked about, they're doing that just for the sake of like talking about those things. And they're not like, I want freedom for people by not incarcerating people. And like, here's a physical thing. And so my take is sort of that, like, we always need to be thinking about the physical things because that's all that matters, kind of.
I.e. the actionable items rather than just talking the talk.
Exactly.
True, but I feel like the physical items do represent something. Like, we construct meaning out of them. So I feel like one isn't, you can't separate one from the other. So yeah, you can't just separate on like the social side, but without the social side, the physical world, I feel like, doesn't really mean much to people. You have like it gets assigned meaning by people. If we're speaking, can you tell I'm an intern to sociology? Like, from a symbolic interactionist perspective, it's like, yeah, you have these big ideas like incarceration and oppression and yeah, like the labor market. These are all very kind of, that's like macro sociology. And then from a micro sociology perspective, it's like, okay, how is class inequality affecting someone's daily life? Like, how does someone create meaning out of the physical, like, lack of resources they have? But, like, what societal meaning do they create out of that?
I would argue you're putting the cart before the horse a little bit there, because I think it seems a little bit more like we use meaning to represent physical goods rather than we take physical things and create meaning out of them. But we've just reached a point where there's so much of what we deal in is not physical and it's social, that there's so many layers of constructed social reality that come between us and any actual physical reality that it feels like the social reality is the more present one, but really all of our social realities are constructed around physical things because those are the only things that we can all agree exist.
Could you like give as a like base a small case? Example?
Yeah, give an example. I don't know. I feel like it's okay. Give an example.
Like you could take the example of money, right? I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of what you would say is like someone has a certain number of things, and to that they can assign a monetary value. And that's, they're sort of creating a social reality out of their physical reality. But what I would say is that we have money and we can use that to translate it into physical goods. And it's more that we use this social reality to represent a physical reality. But there's so many layers of social reality that we've built up over time that sometimes it's hard to actually get all the way through to see the physical reality it represents.
Mm-hmm. Especially, I think a good example is money and assigning value, because like a painting, I mean, the only way that you can like determine its value, I mean, from a purely physical standpoint, it realistically probably doesn't have all that much value. I mean, I think its emotional impacts is an aspect of its physical meaning, although still tainted by social, because each person's social realm like impacts how they physically react to this physical piece. But I mean, we can assign millions of dollars to a painting, which I think can only come when you have all these societal layers.
And of course there's the whole, you know, how the high art market is used to create, you know, tax shelters for the rich.
I think anyone listening to this can tell that we are a bunch of college freshmen sitting around desperately clinging. I'm so, wow.
I feel like we've gotten
comfortable with my personal information being revealed like that.
We've spun down the rabbit hole of confusion.
And now let's spin into,
see, we're in the abstract right
another
now.
Rabbit hole, at least I think a rabbit hole of a song, which is Fly Like an Eagle by the Steve Miller Band. I think it's pretty sort of transcendental and hopefully will confuse our audience that much more.
Wait, hold on. Speaking of assigning value to things and emotional responses to things like a painting or like a guitar solo that you leave hanging halfway
through. This is
through.
Fly Like an Eagle by the Steve Miller Band.
Do, 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 do.
Well, time has slipped into the future and brought us back to talking.
Yes!
Whoa.
Wow, deep. Okay, so we've been having some pretty interesting conversations. And
I agree.
Now we're going to talk a little bit about priorities here, you know? Like, our priority is this show, obviously. That's Noah and I's number one priority. But we're, you know, Caitlin has some choice words for people who say they don't have time for, what, Caitlin? What is... Let's hear. What's your tick? What ticks you off?
So there's a lot. It's hard. We are in a society where we have a lot of deadlines made for us regarding
good
school,
connection. Good.
Regarding lots of things. And as students, I often find I'm surrounded by people who say a lot of, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. That is something I struggle with and need to say more often, because I often don't have time for things and, you know,
just say,
here we
yeah,
are.
Like, okay,
I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
I would love to
yep,
do that. You know,
yep.
I'll have fun.
Relatable.
There are certain things when it comes to prioritizing, like a protest or social actions or working on an issue that is going to harm us all, or where while there's an injustice happening, where, yes, it's like part of it is sort of the like win the game first and then make a change, or make a change as you're playing the game. And like, wow, as we're going along and like, you know, all trying to get good grades so we can get hired and then, you know, work at a job. Like, as we're going along, are we just wasting all that time as injustices and, like, you know, like, the climate is changing and we're all going down
yeah,
if we don't do anything about it. And like,
why am I enrolled in college if, like, I may not have enough of a life after this because mm-hmm, I'm going to be so stifled by climate change? So, like, utilitarian-wise, maybe I should drop out of college and, like, commit to, like, being radically environmental and, like, doing as much as I possibly can with my life to, like, guarantee that we do not enter, like, climate catastrophe.
Right, and it's hard to balance those priorities over time, and, like, this is something I struggle with, too, of being able to not just focus on the present and to balance long-term mm-hmm, things into time management in whatever capacity. But like, the one piece about the I don't have time for that phrase is it really means that is not my priority. Mm. And if people were more honest about that, I think you know, it'd be interesting how that would shift mindsets, because it really is an excuse to fall behind. But like, I remember, so because I struggle so much with time management, I've seen quite a few TED Talks on time management and procrastination and the like.
That. A great way to procrastinate is to watch videos about how badly you're procrastinating.
Oh, amazing. For real. Okay. It's so good. But this one lady, and this has stuck with me for a while now, she was giving this example of, you know, you have this woman and she's so good at time management and she goes and she works her job and she's with her kids and she's doing all the things and you're like, wow, goals. Her basement floods. Somehow she has time to take care of that because all of a sudden that's the priority. She needs to take care of that. She can't just let that fester. So then you have this, that like, it was like, that was like the snap moment for me of, oh, so if I prioritize something, suddenly I'll have time for it. It does mean saying no to other things. Like, mm-hmm. There's not some magical trick in the world. Liam's giving me a look because I'm bad at saying no to other things.
12. It does. We have had 12 conversations about how she is doing easily double to triple the number of regular activities that a single human being could handle.
And we hear this from about 50% of the Tufts population, which is a special, special place to be. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But basically, yeah, that's the whole point of like, just make time for it.
So you're saying this idea, yeah.
There's a way to make time for things that matter. And it does mean leaving off other things or maybe not making your assignment as good as it could be, but like, you know, there's a line. Yeah.
But then you also brought up a good point about balancing short-term versus long-term priorities because, mm-hmm. Because you could argue that, well, you know, by spending my time on my college degree, that's going to enable me to make more change in the future.
Right. And like, exactly. That's what my parents, when I call them on the phone, I'm like, but mom, I don't care about my math homework. I just want to go like protest or I just want to be working for this organization. And they're like, well, also, if you had a Tufts degree behind your name and you got in this position of power and then you can use social power structures, maybe you'd be in a better position. I'm like, huh, you're right.
Wow.
Yeah, but the world is literally ending, Mom.
Okay, well, Elliot was bringing up another point, which is not the opposite point at all.
More related to this than you think.
Oh, okay, so, Elliot. Okay.
We asked ourselves about priorities, about what matters. Like, what does matter? For me, I've kind of come to learn recently that why do we do anything? Like, why am I doing this? Why am I going to school or fighting climate change? Like, why am I trying to save the earth? The earth isn't dying. It sort of is, but humans are the ones that are dying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for real.
People's what matters.
Yes.
And so when I'm trying to make my decisions this year, I've not been doing the best job of it all the time. I've done a pretty good job, I'd say. I've tried to prioritize, like, what does this matter for people? Like, going to the dining protest instead of doing a paper, like that matters for a lot of people. Or even just like going to hang out with people instead of doing work, like that's building relationships with people. I spent a decent amount of time hitchhiking last year, and you learn a lot standing on the side of the road soliciting rides from strangers.
Do people still hitchhike?
Not as much these days.
So was it literally just you? Like, how did people react to the idea of like you being like, I'm literally just hitchhiking?
I mean, there were old people like, oh man, I remember when I used to do that when I was your age. Those were the days or whatever. Some people like, I've never seen people. I don't see people like you anymore. Be careful. People don't pick up people in this country. Spoiler alert: they do.
Where in the country were you?
I hitchhiked in 15 different countries last year, so a little bit different. But so I saw a lot of different people in different places, and what I found was that people who aren't in a hurry are generally just have more flexibility to be better people, to help other people out. Mm. Like in small communities or places like the Norwegian Arctic was one of my favorite places because nobody had places to be. Like part of it was due to the fact that their company, or not their company, their country sells loads of oil to the rest of the world and is able to provide a lot of capital to the whole country. And like, they're pretty much set whether or not they do a job or not. Like, everybody has stable lives. But no one was in a hurry to be anywhere. And they all just, they see a guy standing on the side of the road. They have no reason not to trust him because everything's safe there. And they're like, I have time to pick this guy up and take him an extra 2 miles out of my way just because he seems like a cool guy and he needs help. Like, whatever. And that was just so amazing. And I've tried to incorporate that in my life. And it's hard to do at Tufts because I slipped back into my old habits of trying to do everything and being an individualist and all that. But I'm trying to fight it.
Well, I feel like this connects a lot to the idea of self-care, which is like a big buzzword of today. But I feel, you know, I feel like in a lot of my readings in classes, it's pretty scientifically proven that if you want to be productive, you need to take time to take care of yourself. Like your
oh, and also when it comes to social issues, like you can't be like trying to care for other people when you aren't yourself in a healthy and happy space.
And now to tie all these concepts together, talking about global exploration and talking about priorities and talking about self-care, there's a Balkan Music Night on Saturday, March 16th. Balkan Music Night is the Boston area's premier event devoted to the exciting and soulful repertoires of traditional music and dance from Southeastern Europe. The 34th annual Balkan Music Night will be held on March 16th, 2019, featuring music and dance from Bulgaria, Greece, Hungary, Macedonia, Serbia, and more, performed by master musicians and bands from near and far. With performances of lively instrumental music and expressive vocal music, you'll be able to listen and dance to music from all corners of the Balkans and beyond. Light refreshments, dance instruction, and a dance performance are part of the fun. It all starts at 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center at 51 Walden in Concord, Massachusetts. For more details and to purchase tickets, go to BalkanMusicNight.com.
I can attest that Balkan music is pretty amazing.
And speaking of the Balkans, another place where people aren't in a hurry, great for hitchhiking.
Wow.
Just don't look like a Syrian refugee.
Elliot, I have so many questions about so many things you have said, including the part where I thought you... You know what, Deborah? When you were like, yeah, I spent some time hitchhiking, I was like, aw, like Elliot's summer vacation. Like he hitchhiked around his hometown. Like he went from one state to the next. And then you were like, 15 different countries. And I was like, oh, and then you were like, yeah, the Norwegian Arctic. Just a lot. Wow. You know, we're going to delve into your life later on because I am curious. But yeah, Noah, you completely.
I am so happy to derail every conversation we have with PSAs.
Also, another PSA, if you don't want to get hurt, don't stop a guitar solo halfway through. It angers people,
Elliot.
Especially when they have emotional connections to it.
This is the rule of threes. It's funny for three times. We have now exhausted that.
Well, that was the third time, so he's still in the clear.
I just need to defend myself from future attacks.
Future time.
I feel like it's time for another time song. What do we have on the playlist? I have
good question.
Vote.
What's your vote, Mona?
My vote is the song from A Star Is Born because we love A Star Is Born. Anyone else here see A Star Is Born?
No.
Oh, wow. No one.
I saw it, and I have thoughts.
Okay, let's play the song, and then let's get to those thoughts, even if they're unrelated to time. A Star Is Born trumps any other... Speaking of priorities, A Star Is Born is always my priority. This is not the right
Mona, do you know by chance if this is solely Bradley Cooper?
Yeah, my thoughts are not positive.
No, what? Okay. You know what?
Oh, here we go. A Star Is Born soundtrack. This is Maybe It's Time by Bradley Cooper from A Star Is Born.
Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Takes a lot to change a man. Hell, it takes a lot to try. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Nobody knows what ways for the dead. Nobody knows what ways for the dead. Some folks just believe in the things they've heard and the things they read. Nobody knows what ways for the dead. I'm glad I can't go back to where I came from. I'm glad those days are gone for good. But if I could take spirits from my past and bring them here, you know I would, know I would. Nobody speaks to God these days. Nobody speaks to God these days. I'd like to think he's looking down and laughing out of ways. Nobody speaks to God these days. When I was a child, they tried to fool me. Said the worldly man was lost and that hell was real. Well, I've seen hell in Reno, and this world's one big old Catherine wheel spinning still. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. It takes a lot to change your plans, hell, a train to change your mind. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Oh, maybe it's time to let the old ways die.
Well, everyone, I am in the wrong crowd. No one here has either seen A Star Is Born and liked it or seen it at all. So I feel attacked because I thought that was absolutely beautiful. And it connects to Noah and I's episode on traditions. If you are a loyal listener, you'll remember that last semester we talked about tradition and how sometimes, you know, it's tradition is to be held onto, and sometimes maybe it's time to let the old ways die. So to all the haters out there, I still love A Star Is Born. Liam, we'll give you your time, not to discuss A Star Is Born because it's unrelated, but unless you really feel the need to, but I know you wanted to bring it back to prioritizing time. You had something to say. Let's give you that spotlight.
I just think it's interesting to note that when we were talking about self-care and your priorities, every single time we brought up doing things to make you happy or improve your mental health, it was framed as, this is necessary so that you can do more. This is necessary to be more productive. And the big problem I have with this isn't just that it obviously, I mean, the obvious, it's makes us more like just sort of tokens in a game that like to generate profit.
Dang, but Liam!
It's difficult right now because there's two sides. There is the capitalist side where people are used to generate profit for someone else, and that's one reason, like, self-care so you can do more for someone else is obviously bad. But then there's also the other side of it, which is, I think, where a lot of ours was coming from, which is that there's currently a very pressing issue of global warming. And so, like, we need to be worried about how productive we're being, because that's an issue that we need to solve. So, like, not only do we need to be, like, not only are we conditioned to be worried about how productive we are for this system that exploits us, but there's also, we actually do need to be productive on a certain level because there's a pressing issue to solve. So it's hard to fight against the first one while also justifying the second one.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, there's also that piece of just, like, enjoying things in life, too.
Like, yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah,
okay. And also related to climate change, you could also see it as we need to stop being so damn productive, or so dang productive. Sorry.
You're saying in terms of, like, consumerist ways? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I read a really interesting book. I forgot the author, unfortunately. He's a Canadian, if that helps. There's not a lot of Canadians out there. It's called Work Girls of the World Relax.
Like eight?
I think it's nine now. It's called Workers of the World Relax. And then he has a second one that's kind of an update on it called Efficiency Shifting.
Yeah, we were talking about this in my econ class. Yeah. Like eight with Brian Roach.
By Conrad Schmidt.
Yes, that guy.
Comrade.
Really, really interesting
comrade.
Guy. Yeah,
but he sounds like a comrade.
He is a comrade. He was basically talking about, I think the main point was, like, back in the 1950s, we had this dream, like, oh yeah, machines are going to do everything. We're going to not have to do any work because we can just sit back and do art and music and they can do all the work for us. And here we are now. We're so much more productive than we were back then because we have these machines, but we're working more hours. So
what happened? And we're getting paid the exact same amount. We're producing so much and the people are not benefiting from it. Like, who's benefiting from all this production?
Why are we doing this production? And we're producing a lot of things that are just kind of waste, like either indirectly or directly. So many things that are literal waste, or products that are going to go obsolete in 2 years. And yeah, it's a mess. And like he also talked a lot about like even clean energy. The idea of that we can have energy and just produce more of it because it's clean. Like, let's say you have, just theoretically speaking, a source of energy that's like a fourth as bad environmental wise as oil, but because you can make it so much cleaner and cheaper, people are using it five times more. Mm-hmm. Then it's damaging the environment more than you would with oil. And so the main point is that economic progress is inherently not environmentally friendly, no matter how green it is, and we all just need to chill.
Wow.
And one piece, yeah, we were talking about this in my environmental economics class.
Amazing.
Of like how it's the other end of it too, is because we're working so much, and like to an extent there's a place where people are overworked and underpaid, but there's also like a lot of upper middle class people are working a lot and getting paid more, and now you have extra money to spend and consume more things that are then being produced by more people who are being exploited. Like it's a cycle on both ends. So yeah.
I just would like to share that only at Tufts would I hear someone say, on the one side, you have capitalism. On the other side, you have global warming. And everyone would be like, yeah, those are the two sides.
I disagree. People care about climate change all over the world.
But I'm just saying, no, that's not what I mean. I'm just saying, like, I do feel like it's very much like, you have, like, one topic of conversation, capitalism. And then the other one is global warming.
Well, to be fair,
that's you.
They're so closely linked.
Yeah. It is pretty well agreed upon by a lot of experts that capitalism, we can't beat capitalism. We can't beat global warming with capitalism. One of them's gonna go.
One of them's gonna go, and I really hope it's not humans.
Yeah.
Interesting. I know, but still, guys, come on, really? You guys are all like, no, everyone, but I feel like everyone I talk to is like this, but that doesn't make
I just think the idea that like caring about the planet and understanding capitalism is like just this very like esoteric thing. And I think really a lot of people do care, and a lot of people can recognize the problems, and we should like be really pushing the broader community and like recognize that people in the broader community probably have thought about this a lot.
Have they though? Because before reading this book, I really hadn't put two, like I think if you had prompted me, I probably would have put two and two together, but I hadn't put two and two together. Like, wait, why does the economy have to keep growing?
Yeah,
because I think so many people still think like, oh, I want to solve climate change, but we can't sacrifice the economy because we're screwed without it. And another thing Mr. Conrad Schmidt talked about in his book was he started this party called the Work Less Party, and a political party. The only purpose of it was not to get elected, because he knew he wouldn't get elected. He just wanted a seat at the table to talk about things in debates. And every other party in the debate, even the Green Party, had to talk about economy, because if they didn't talk about economy, no one's going to vote for him.
Mm.
And so people still, even though I appreciate your optimism, Noah, I love it. We need your optimism right now. But I don't think a lot of people realize the links, because again, back to the point about losing connection with the physical world and being in the abstract, we have no idea most people have no idea how directly linked everything they do is with, let's just say, the natural world, or what we call nature. Because what is nature?
We had that discussion, didn't we, in like one of our first episodes?
Yes, I think so.
Wild.
It's all related.
Elliot, that was such a good that just like was such a good sum of everything we've discussed in the past 49 minutes and 25 seconds. And I'm really proud of you. And I'd like
to
thank you.
No problem.
What time is it?
Did I just hear the words that I've been waiting to hear? I apologize. This is What Time Is It from High School Musical 2. It will not be more than a minute. I apologize in advance.
Time of our lives, anticipation. What time is it? Summertime. good to be chilling out. I'm off the clock, precious hours. Now my girl's what it's all about.
Ready for some sunshine, for my heart to take a chance. I'm here to stay and I'm moving on. Way ready for a summer romance.
I needed that. That was beautiful.
What a refresher.
We have a little dance party here at WMFO for you listeners. I hope you are also having your own dance party. Amazing. Okay, kids. We're in the final home stretch. This has been such a good round table. I'm honestly shocked.
Okay, we do still have 10 minutes, Mona.
Okay, well.
Shocked. Did you expect less?
Nope. I was nervous about the, like,
Mona and I did not give ourselves enough time to plan out this episode. So
we were like, we're just gonna invite as many people as possible and have them talk, and it worked out amazing.
I agree.
Great. What else did we want to hit before we all pack our roads and hitchhike home?
Well, I mean, there is the one thing left from that other discussion, which is that as things get more and more productive, what happens? Because at a certain point, you get productivity without any input. That's the sort of automation that Elliot was talking about. But with the way things work now, if you say you have a factory, you own everything that comes out of it, but you have to pay people to work to produce things in that factory, which is our system that works.
There was
a lot of air quotes, but
air quotes cannot be seen over the radio, but we appreciate the sentiment.
I figured the viewers would feel them in their hearts.
I felt his tone.
But the problem being is if you don't have to pay anyone, then some people have everything and everyone else has nothing.
Yeah,
I was talking about this earlier.
Dream conversation.
And whether however you feel about that, you can't argue with the fact that
it doesn't work.
Hungry people won't sit around while a couple other people have everything.
Like, exactly.
People eventually would reach a point where they get a little too upset with things.
Automation is a path that either leads into socialism or barbarism. Is, I think a lot of people would say most things are a path to either socialism or barbarism. Automation without socialism will lead to a society in which, like, few people own everything, but then they have nothing more to take from others, and then, like, the system just implodes because there will be riots and chaos and massive amounts of violence. Unless
they
the
people
that
riots.
Movie Elysium, where the rich people go into a spaceship in the sky and leave everyone on the
that movie is
dirt
so
planet.
Stupid though. Like,
but,
I wish that was a good
but,
movie, but it's not. But it's a bad movie.
But maybe we already see that in this country, people are able to travel only if they have absurd amounts of wealth to, like, very secluded and safe places. And as climate change impedes, I think we'll see billionaires building bunkers, and we'll see poor people on the coast of other countries and of our own country just starving and dying.
It's already happening.
It's happening now, like today.
All the issues, like, obviously, because of just, like, the way privilege and stuff works, like, because people don't want to live by toxic dumps or don't want to live by a factory that's polluting, like, mm-hmm. it ends up being the people who can't pay for something better, and oftentimes that's related with race in this country due to our, like, horrible past, and, like, you know, it's really, really, I'm not going to say a bad word here, bad word, but, like, yes. That's,
also,
yes.
If you're a billionaire building a secret bunker to go hide from climate change, or even, like, a small, like, community to hide from climate change, are you going to tell everybody? Like, they're probably building them right now, and we have no idea.
Wow.
Good takes here.
Well, okay, but then let's...
Certainly
that's
haven't
depressing.
Told you all about mine.
What's an inspiring take?
Hey, we haven't all died yet. So, in our remaining time before our literal deadline, where we die. It's all about, you know, how you want to...
That's a pretty literal deadline, isn't it?
That was wild. Physical. That was wild, Caitlin.
It's all about, like, how you want to... What you want from life and, like, you know, whatever your religious views are about afterlives. I know, like, personally, I'm like, I don't know whatever happens on either end of being born and dying, but in the middle, I'm going to do what I can to, A, enjoy myself and make as many other people have a good time in a...
Time.
To also, live in a healthy, happy way as well.
Based on what I've seen, we should have at least a solid couple years of very cool leather fashion and very fast cars before it all falls apart. It'll partially fall apart, some great fashion, some cool scenes, and then everything else just sort of goes. So you can look forward to those years, I think.
Amazing.
And some protests in the meantime while you're at it.
I think Mona said to think about some positives and good fashion in a decaying world, I think is
that's not
peak
yeah.
optimism.
Wow. Well, kids, are there, like, you know how we like what are some concrete things
what are things you can do to make things better?
Eat a bug now.
Little plug, okay, you can eat a bug, or you can also go talk to your representatives. It's actually real easy to just look up your address and find who your legislators are, find an issue you care about, and let them know your opinions, because they care about their constituents. Well, hopefully they care about their constituents, because that's their job. Reach out to me if you want to come.
Caitlin is a lobbying queen.
Yeah.
She lobbies like I... don't lobby. She lobbies very well.
There will be a lobby day to advocate for carbon pricing on April 9th.
April 9th, kids.
Hit me up.
Well, let's have, you know, we'll all hopefully still be alive by April 9th. So,
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
If you do write a letter in red ink and burn it, your representative will receive it in the mail.
I don't get that. Was that funny?
It was funny. Well,
this
is Mona and Noah Save the World, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Free From Radio. We will not be here next week because we are going on spring break.
Or the week after because spring break. But we'll be back.
Having some good times.
March 30th.
Yes, March 30th.
Wait, actually, I won't be here March 30th. You know why?
Because Heather's...
No, not because of Heather's Elliot, but Heather's in the pit of Elliot's and everyone... Jesus. Heather... No, Elliot's in the pit of Heather's, and that is a great show that I am technically fake involved in. But what I am doing on March 30th is I am celebrating Persian New Year, Nowruz, with the Persian Students Association at Tufts.
Very cool.
So everyone should get involved in that, and we'll
PSA.
Great PSA about the PSA.
PSA. It is closing time for us, and this is Closing Time by Semisonic.
Jackets, move it to the